Osho, Nirvana, The Last Nightmare. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 7.
The Master Fosu Hoyen said, "They say that Buddha uttered 5,048 truths during his lifetime. They include the truth of emptiness and the truth of being. They include the truth of sudden enlightenment and the truth of gradual enlightenment. Are not all these yea-sayings? But on the other hand, Yoka, in the Song of Enlightenment, says there are no beings and no Buddhas. Sages are sea bubbles, and great minds are only flickerings of lightning. Are not all these naysayings? O my disciples, if you say yea, you deny Yoka, and if you say nay, you contradict Buddha. If Buddha were here with you, how would he solve this problem? If we knew where to stand, we would question Buddha every morning and greet him every night. But as we don't know where to stand, I will let you into a secret. When I say this is so, perhaps it is not a yea saying. When I say this is not so, perhaps it is not a nay saying. Turn to the east and see the holy western land. Face south and see the northern star."
Nirvana, thou art truth, is an existential experience. One has to be it to know it. One has to dissolve into it to be it. Even to call it an experience is not exactly right, because it is more like experiencing than like an experience. The word experience gives the feeling as if the thing is finished, completed. It is never completed, never finished. It is a process, a dynamic process, which goes on moving. The very movement is its life. It never comes to an end. The goal is in the journey. Except the journey, there is no goal. The journey is the goal. That's why even to call it an experience is to call it wrongly. It is an experiencing. It is never finished. You enter into it, but you never come out of it. By the time you can come out of it, you are no more. It is a point of no return. Experience exists between the experiencer and the experienced. But in the experience of truth, or call it God, or whatsoever you like, the experiencer is dissolved, the experienced is dissolved. There remains only a dynamic process of experiencing. It is a river without banks. The duality is not there. There exists no division. how to express it, because all expressions will be limitations. All limitations are falsifications. If you say God is, you falsify. If you say God is not, again you falsify from the other end. When you say God is, you have uttered an untruth. Let me explain it to you. We can say the house is. We can say the tree is. We can say the man is. Because one day the tree will not be. One day the tree was not. One day the house will not be. One day the house was not. Between two nothings, there is just a lightning of existence. We can call the house, it is. But we cannot say God is. In the same sense, the word will become a falsification. Because God has always been there, is there, will be there. So in the same sense we say the house is, we cannot say God is. God is makes God also a thing. And God is not a thing. God is all things together. All things that have been ever and all things that will ever be there. God is the totality of past, present and future. So how to call God is? In fact, the sentence God is a tautology, a repetition. As if you are saying isness is. God means isness. The isness of all that is. The isness of the house is God. The isness of the tree is God. The isness of man is God. You cannot call God is, because then God will also be one of the million things. He will not be the totality. You cannot say God is. It is a falsification. You cannot say God is not, because the totality is. How can you deny it? Even if you say it is illusion, the illusion is. Even if you say it is a dream, the dream is. The dreamer is. The dreamed is. You cannot simply say God is not. You are. And the person is to whom you are saying God is not. The isness cannot be denied. So what to do? How to express God? How to express Nirvana? How to express Tao or the truth? They cannot be expressed. They can be understood. They can be indicated. But they cannot be expressed. Expression is very limited. And God is infinite. The infinite cannot be put into words. You can force the infinite into the words, but then it is no more infinite. That is the falsification. All that is beautiful, all that is lovely, all that is good and true remains unexpressed. Lao Tzu has said, truth cannot be expressed. The moment you express it, it is no more truth. This is one of the most fundamental things to be understood. Truth can be sowed, but cannot be said. You can sow truth. A Buddha is an arrow sowing the truth, but he is not saying it. And whatsoever he says is a falsification. Zen monks say that Buddha uttered infinite lies. Because whatsoever is uttered becomes a lie. It is not a question of what it is. The moment you utter it, it becomes a lie. The utterance is very finite, and the uttered is infinite. Have you watched, if you have fallen in love with a man or a woman and you say, I love you, suddenly you feel the impotence of language. I love you does not carry much. Looks absurd to say. Looks as if you have betrayed your inner feeling. Real lovers never say, I love you. They may do many things to sow their love, but they will never say, I love you, because to say it is to corrupt it. It is vaster than the word love. Whenever you will say to somebody, I love you, you will feel a little guilty. If you don't love, then there is no problem. Then you can go and say. Then these are clichés. Then they don't mean much. Then you can go on playing with words. But if you really love, then your heart will beat faster when you say, I love you. And you will feel a little embarrassed. It is something which cannot be said. Yes, through your eyes you can sow it. Through your touch you can sow it. Through 1001 things you can indicate towards it. But how can you say it? The language is not capable of it. If you cannot say love, how can you say prayer? Prayer is falling in love with the whole. It is the greatest love there is. How can you say prayer? A really religious person sits silent in his prayer, and those who go on talking to God, saying things to God, don't know what prayer is. They are repeating clichés. They are repeating words. A real prayer is bound to be silent. One remains mystified. One is overpowered by the infinite. One wonders. One is in a deep awe. But how can you say anything? Words falter. The mind stops. The thinking cannot move. Suddenly you are in a deep emptiness. You are there, but words are not there. You feel your own heart beating. You can feel your own breathing. You can feel even your own blood circulating when you become totally silent. But there is no mind. Prayer cannot be done. It is not an act. It is nothing like a doing. It is something you can be in it, but you cannot do it. You can be prayerful, but you cannot pray. It is a state of mind, not an activity. God, Nirvana, Tao, Truth, just meaningless sounds, indicative, pointing towards the infinite, towards the beyond, fingers pointing to the moon. But fingers are not the moon. If I show you the moon with my finger, don't catch hold of my finger. It has nothing to do with the moon. Don't be attached to my finger, otherwise you will miss the moon. The finger has to be forgotten. You have to move away from the finger to see the moon. So whatsoever a Buddha has said has to be forgotten. Its scriptures have to be dropped. They are fingers pointing to the moon. But you become a Christian, you become a Hindu, you become a Buddhist, there you miss. Suddenly you are caught by empty words, verbiage, rubbish. And the more you are caught in the verbiage, the more you are farther away from truth. Truth is an experiencing. It is not an intellectual effort. It has nothing to do with intellect. Your intelligence burns bright. Yes, your intelligence has a clarity. But the mirror is completely clean of words. Once, Goethe was asked, what is the meaning, the secret of life? He replied, that which the plant does unconsciously, do consciously. That is to say, grow. The meaning of life is in growth. The meaning of Nirvana is in your growth. The meaning of truth is in your growth. Grow. And there is no end to this growth. You go on growing. You go on growing. The journey is infinite. There never comes a goal. Many goals come and go. Many peaks of experience come and go. But still, the infinite waits. And it goes on waiting. You cannot exhaust it. That is the trouble with language. Language is exhaustive. When I say to you, I love you, I have said everything exhausted. But love goes on. Love is a growth, an alive process. I love you is dead language. Something has died in the words. Words are like corpses. A Buddha, one who is enlightened, helps you to grow. If he talks only you to help you to drop all talking. If he uses words, he uses only to help you to become wordless. If he talks only to indicate towards silence. So always remember, when a Buddha says anything, the container is not important at all, but the content. The word is the container, and the meaning is the content. But that meaning can come to you only when you grow. Unless you taste something of Buddhahood, you will not understand. So it is not a question of knowledge, it is a question of understanding. Knowledge you can go on gathering. You need not grow. You can go on stuffing yourself with knowledge. And inside, deep down, you remain the same. No growth happens. No transformation happens. In fact, all the knowledge that you gather hinders growth. One becomes too much burdened by what one knows. The more you know, the less the possibility of knowing. Then your capacity to know is too much burdened. Then your capacity to know is too much clouded. Religion is not a process of learning. In fact, it is just the contrary, a process of unlearning. Whatsoever you know has to be dropped, unlearned again, so that you can become a child once more, so that you can be reborn. And this second birth is the real birth. The first birth is not the real birth. It is only an opportunity for the second birth, that's all. If the second birth happens, you used your first birth. If the second never happens, then the opportunity was lost. The first birth is only the birth of the body and mind. The second birth is the birth of your spirit, of your soul. And unless you know something of the innermost eternal core of your being, you have not known anything. But humanity loves knowledge, information. It is very ego-satisfying. Whenever you can say that you know, whenever you can give some advice to somebody else, you feel very high. Not knowing who you are, not knowing where you are, you go on playing the role of a teacher. Just look around. Everybody is giving advice to everybody else. Of course, nobody takes it. And that is good that nobody takes. Otherwise, the world will be in much more trouble. It is already in much trouble. It is good that nobody takes your advice. Your advice is worthless. In trouble, in crisis, you will not listen to your own advice. It is just dead junk. It has nothing to do with your inner growth. Real knowing is part of growth. Grow. Each moment, go on growing, expanding, exploding. Each moment should be a new birth. Why it is not so? Because you go on carrying the past with you. If you want each moment to be a new birth, you have to die also each moment to the past. Die to the past so that you can be reborn here now. All knowledge is of the past. Mind is always of the past. Consciousness is always of the present. A Buddha helps you to become more conscious. He does not help you to become more knowledgeable. I have heard an anecdote. A worried fellow entered the psychiatrist's office wearing love beads, bell-bottom pants, and soldier-length hair, and is smoking a joint. The psychiatrist said, "You claim you are not a hippie. Then how do you explain the clothes, the hair, and the pot?" Doctor, cite the chapter. That's what I'm here to find out. Nobody knows why you are the way you are. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows why you have landed in the state of mind in which you have landed. Completely unaware, you go on drifting. You go on imitating others because you don't know who you are. The only way to get an identity, an image, is to imitate others. I was reading Alan Watts' autobiography. He relates one incident that when he was a child, there was a boy in the same street named Peter, and he appreciated that boy very much. That boy was sort of a hero to Alan Watts. Sometimes he will come home so much impressed by his hero, Peter, that he will start behaving like him. And his mother will say, "Alan, remember, you are Alan, not Peter." From the very childhood, everybody is trying to be somebody else. Because you don't know who you are. And it is very difficult to live without an identity. It is very difficult to live without knowing who you are. Only two possibilities are there. Either you go in, which is a tremendous adventure and needs tremendous courage. Or you imitate others, a bit from somebody and a bit from somebody else, and you become a patchwork. Look at yourself and you can find how you have become a patchwork. Whenever you say something inside, just watch from where it is coming. Your mother, your father, your brother, the friend, the teacher, the priest, from where this bit has come. And go on discarding all that has come from others. A deep cleansing is needed to grow. Because you cannot imitate growth. Growth has to happen to you. You cannot go on imitating. Drop all imitation. And then by and by, you will have a clarity. By and by, you will have a ground where to stand. You will know who you are. In the beginning, it remains vague, confused, chaotic. But if you are courageous, by and by, things settle. And for the first time, you become aware of your own being. And each being is unique. Never has there been anybody else like you, and never will be again. God has staked much on you. He expects much from you. You are a novel experiment. Don't miss the opportunity. But people go on imitating, and people go on collecting knowledge, and people go on creating a false identity just to cling to, so they don't feel alone, so they don't feel lost. If you really want to get home, first you will have to get lost. If you really want to know something, first you will have to drop all knowledge. If you really want to be yourself, and who does not want, you will have to stop imitating. Enough is enough. You have imitated enough and wasted much opportunity. But it is never too late. Drop it. Cleanse your mirror of being. in the beginning, you will be afraid because it will feel empty. But emptiness has a freshness about it. Emptiness has a beauty about it. Emptiness is a virgin. And everything comes out of that virgin emptiness. That womb of emptiness creates everything. Even if you start working on your inner growth, you are always divided. In a certain way, split, schizophrenic. A part of you goes on clinging to the outside image, which is cheap. One part goes on working inside. But this dual activity, which is contradictory, dissipates energy. Take a decision. If you really want to grow, then unburden yourself of all that has come from others to you. They may have given it in deep love. That is not the point. They may have given it to you because they wanted to help you. That too is not the point. Feel grateful to them. But keep yourself unburdened from all the advices given to you, from all the knowledge thrown in you, from all the conditionings that the society has forced you to be in. Unconditioning is needed. That's what I mean when I say unlearning. Once the mind is unconditioned, things again become pure. The stream of consciousness again flows. It is no more blocked. You are no more frozen. The complexes by and by melt. You become a wild energy. And remember, God is wild. God is not yet civilized and never will be. Once God is civilized, he will be dead. God is wild, raw energy with tremendous potentiality and no limitations. If you want to move in a step with God, you will have also to be like him, a little bit at least, a little wild. A sheer delight in energy is needed, not knowledge. Not character, but a sheer delight in energy. A sheer delight of being. Just a celebration that I am here. Just the happiness that I can breathe, that I can see, that I can hear, that I can dance, that I can love. Just a sheer delight. And a gratitude arises in you. That gratitude is the quality of a religious man. And in that gratitude, by and by, one starts tasting what nirvana is. Nirvana is cessation of the ego. And when the ego ceases, God enters. When the host is no more there, then the guest comes. Be more poetic about life and less philosophic. Allow poetry to enter in you and stop philosophizing. All philosophy is borrowed. Poetry need not be borrowed. Every child is born as a poet. Every child is a poet. To be a poet is natural. It is a gift of nature. I was reading a few lines of Rainer Maria Rilke. Oh, tell us, poet, what do you do? I praise. But those dark, deadly, devastating ways, how do you bear them, suffer them? I praise. And then the nameless, beyond guess or gaze, how do you call it, conjure it? I praise. And whence your right in every kind of maze, in every mass, to remain true? I praise. And that the mildest and the wildest ways know you like star and star, because I praise. This is what I mean when I say a sheer delight in energy. Then simply you start praising. Not that there is a God, but a praise arises in you. And because of the praise, everything becomes so holy, sacred. People come to me and they ask if I can convince them there is a God, then they will pray. And I tell them, if you pray, you will be convinced that there is God. God is a byproduct. God is not a primary experience, a secondary experience. The basic thing is the capacity to pray and praise and to celebrate. Forget all about God. Just feel happy. A tremendous opportunity has been given to you for no reason at all. You are alive. You have not earned it. You have not done anything to get it. It has been showered on you. Suddenly one day you find you are alive, loving, moving, breathing. And all the beauties and the experiences of life are available to you. The sun rises in the morning, the moon comes in the night, and the whole expanse of sky fills with the stars. Praise. Pray. Feel grateful. The gift is so valuable that you cannot imagine how it can be earned. It is beyond valuation. Can you think, can you imagine that something you can do which will give you more life? How you will do, what you will do? Even a single moment of life, you cannot create. It is a gift. And when one starts praising, things become more and more beautiful. Trees become more greener. Flowers bloom as they had never bloomed before, because you were blind and you could not see. And birds sing as they have never sung before. Not that they were not singing, but you were deaf. Suddenly your sensations are open. Suddenly your senses have become sensitive, receptive, and the whole life becomes a celebration. Be a poet, and then there is a possibility to know what is. God is known by the poetic intelligence within you. Nirvana is attained by the poetic possibility, potentiality within you. It has nothing to do with philosophy. philosophy always goes on denying. It always goes on saying no. Logic is a no saying. Life is bridged by a deep yes saying. You say no, the bridge is broken. The sin story. The master Foso Hoen said, they say that Buddha uttered 5,048 truths during his lifetime. This is just a way of saying that he uttered millions of truths. And the truth is one. But a Buddha goes on saying it in different ways. Because it cannot be said. So he goes on devising new ways to say it again. Again he fails. Again he tries. Again he fails. The failure is absolutely certain. But the compassion of a Buddha goes on. He would like to tell it to you. He would like to share it with you. He has attained and you are stumbling in the dark. He would like to call you to the path. His compassion says, say, go on the housetops and shriek, so that all those who are stumbling in the dark can hear. And he tries. Every moment of his life he tries. Again and again he fails. Because truth cannot be said. That's why 5,048 times. 5,048 truths he uttered. This number is a symbolic number. It shows infinity. It shows millions of times he utters. But still the truth remains unuttered. He devised many ways. He said from one side, felt it has not been communicated, said it from the opposite side, maybe it can be communicated that way. Failed from there, then he found another site. Zen Buddhists say that when Buddha became enlightened, since then he has not uttered a single word. And also they say that he has said 5,048 truths. What do they mean? They mean he tried hard. But he could not say. He said, but the truth cannot be said and could not be said. He tried hard and missed again and again. Because the very nature of truth is such that it is inexpressible. The master Foso Hoen said, they say that Buddha uttered 5,048 truths during his lifetime. One thing will be of great value to understand. Truth cannot be said, but at the same time you cannot hide it. You cannot say it, but you cannot hide it. It tries to assert itself in millions of ways. The very experience is such that it wants to be said. And it is also such that it cannot be said. Just a few days before, Anupam asked a question that when she goes deep in meditation, something happens to her, but she cannot share it with her lover. So she feels a little guilty. Lovers want to share everything whatsoever they have. Love is a unconditional sharing. So she wants to share it, but feels it is impossible to share. Guilt arises. One feels as if one is hiding something. But the very nature of truth is such. If you try to express it, you cannot express. The glimpse comes to you when there are no words, when the mind stops functioning. Then comes the glimpse. And by the time words have come back to the mind, the glimpse is gone. They never meet. When the glimpse is there, words are not there. The mind is not there to recognize, to formulate. When the mind comes back, the glimpse is gone. From one door you enter, the truth leaves it, the house from another door. You never meet. Truth leaves the moment the mind enters, but still the fragrance, the mind can feel something has happened, something tremendously valuable has happened. Somebody has been in the house, you can feel somebody has passed. The room has a different quality to it now. Your whole being is throbbing with some experience. Something has happened. A light in the darkness. But the mind cannot capsulate what has happened. It can feel a little bit. Something certainly has happened. The being is not the same. The house has changed. But still, what has happened remains incomprehensible to the mind. The mind would like it to share with all those you love, with all those you feel far, you would like to share. But if you try, you will fail. So these two things are part of the nature of the experience itself. First, you would like to share. You will have a tremendous urge to share, and then you will fail. Sharing is not possible. And the second thing, still you cannot hide it. It will show from your eyes, the way you will walk, the way you will talk, the way you will remain silent. It will show. Have you watched it? One day a man came to me and he said, "I am very stupid. Can silence help me?" I told him, "You try. At least this is good, that you accept that you are stupid. This is the beginning of wisdom. But if a man is stupid and he becomes silent, the silence will have something of the stupidity. A stupid man silent will still be a stupid man. The silence of one who is enlightened and the silence of one who is stupid is going to be totally different. The stupid man's silence will be stupid. His talk will be stupid. His silence will also be stupid. The silence of a Buddha will have a light, a flavor, a fragrance. His talk will also have the same quality. It is not a question of being silent or talking. It is a question of your being, the very quality. When you have touched something of the no mind, it will start expressing itself in many ways. Through the mind it will be difficult to express, but through your totality it will be expressed. You will see in a different way. If somebody will look into your eyes will become silent pools of energy. If somebody will touch your hand or your body, he will feel a certain coolness, tranquility. Something has happened inside. You are carrying something in your womb. Have you seen a woman with a child in her womb walking? She walks differently. She carries something within her being. Whenever an experience of truth, even a glimpse, a satori, has happened, you walk differently. You are no more the same. You cannot hide it. You cannot express it and you cannot hide it. Those 5,048 truths include the truth of emptiness and the truth of being. They include the truth of sudden enlightenment and the truth of gradual enlightenment. Very paradoxical. Sometimes Buddha says that your innermost being is totally empty. And sometimes he says your innermost being is a positive being, full of bliss, peace, tranquility. What is true? You can have a glass full of water and then you can empty it. You can throw the water out. The glass is empty now, in a way, but is still full in another way. The water has been emptied, but now air has entered into the glass. The glass is still not empty. You can say it is empty of water, but you cannot say it is empty. It is full of air. You can empty your room of all furniture, and then you will say this room is empty. But have you watched? Now the room is full of room, space, full of emptiness. Of course, the furniture is removed. The furniture was a barrier for the room to exist in its totality. Now the room is simply a room. A room means a space. Now it is a space full of a space. You can move more easily. You can be more easily in it. Now nothing hinders the way. Sometimes Buddha says that innermost being is empty. And sometimes he says that innermost being is absolute being. Empty of the mind and full of no mind. Empty of thoughts, full of no thoughts, intervals, gaps, full of room. If you can enter a man of meditation, you will find in him infinite space and no barriers. If you can enter in me, you will not find any barrier anywhere. You can go on and on and on. The furniture has been removed. I am totally empty in a way, in a sense, and totally full in another way. I am empty of myself, but full of God. God means room. God means space. You can be emptied of intellect, and then you are full of intelligence. You can be emptied of knowledge, then you are full of understanding. Both are true together. They include the truth of sudden enlightenment and the truth of gradual enlightenment. Sometimes Buddha says you proceed gradually, by and by, in steps. And sometimes he says enlightenment is sudden. It cannot be divided into steps. It is more like a jump than like going on a staircase. Both are true. Try to see. This is where the poetry of religion becomes something beyond logic. For logic, this is difficult. The logic will say either or. And poetry says both and. The logic always gives you a choice, either this or that. Either say the innermost being is empty, or say it is full of being. It gives you alternatives. But the poetry of being says and both. It is empty of something and full of something. You heat water. Gradually it becomes hotter and hotter. Gradually it becomes hotter and hotter. Of course, step by step. 90 degree, 91 degree, 92 degree, 99 degree, then it comes to the point of 100 degree, the evaporating point, then suddenly a jump and the water disappears into vapors. It evaporates. Now both things are happening. If you ask me, is evaporation a sudden jump? I will say yes. It is a sudden jump because exactly at 100 degree, the water takes a jump, the form changes, it is transfigured. It is no more water, it becomes vapor. And it happens in a sudden jump. But the process of getting heated is gradual. Of course, the water is water at 90 degrees. 80 degrees, even 99 degrees, it is still water, hot, getting closer and closer to 100 degrees. You can stop it at 99 degrees. It will never evaporate. It will cool down again. Put the fire off. The water will remain water. The sudden jump never happened, but it was getting ready. But you cannot help water to jump from 90 degree suddenly and become evaporation. That's not possible. Gradual and sudden are not contradictions. There is no question of choosing them. Both are needed in their own ways. Because of such contradictions, a logical mind thinks that religious people are mad. A logical mind cannot make any sense out of these things. He goes on saying that either this is possible or that is possible, both are not possible. For example, Zen masters say Buddha never uttered a single word. And at the same time, they go on saying that he uttered 5,048 truths, which is true, both are true. He uttered millions of words, and still he could not utter a single word of truth. The master Foso Hoen said, are not all these e-sayings, but on the other hand, Yoka, another enlightened master, in the Song of Enlightenment, says there are no beings and no Buddhas. Sages are sea bubbles, and great minds are only flickerings of lightning. Are not all these naysayings? Now, Yoka is a follower of Buddha, a disciple of Buddha, a lover of Buddha. Still he says that there are no beings and no Buddhas, and sages are sea bubbles. And this Yoka was worshipping every morning, every evening, bowing down at the stone Buddha of his temple, and at the same time singing in his song of enlightenment that sages are sea bubbles. What does it mean? What does he mean? If sages are sea bubbles, then stop praising Buddha, praying Buddha, touching his feet, bowing down. Stop all this nonsense. But if you ask Yoka, he will say, I have learned this, that sages are sea bubbles and Buddhas don't exist from this man Gautam Buddha. So I have to pay my respects. This understanding has come to me through him. He indicated the path. It happened once, a Zen master was celebrating his master's birthday. The master has died. Somebody asked him, why are you celebrating? Because as far as I know, the master has denied you. He never accepted you as his disciple. You had tried long, that I know. You have tried again and again, that I know. But every time you were refused. You were never initiated by him. So why you are celebrating his birthday? Traditionally, it is to be celebrated only by the accepted disciples. The master laughed and he says, precisely because he refused me, I celebrate. Now I can understand his compassion. If he had accepted me, I may have become just an imitator, because he threw me to myself continuously. By and by, I stood on my own feet. By and by, I dropped the desperate search to cling to somebody else. He helped me. He was my master. In his rejection, he accepted me. But this is illogical. But still, if you look through the eyes of a poet, through the eyes of a lover, you can understand it. Intellectually, it will be difficult. But if you are intelligent, it is a simple fact. Sometimes, to deny is to give. Sometimes, to reject is to accept. Sometimes, not to help is the only way to help. But on the other hand, Yoka in the Song of Enlightenment says, there are no beings and no Buddhas. Sages are sea bubbles, and great minds are only flickerings of lightning. Are not all these naysayings? The master is asking his audience that something Buddha says, which looks like a yes saying, and then his disciple Yoka says something which looks absolutely negative, a naysaying. Ah, my disciples, if you say E, you deny Yoka. And if you say nay, you contradict Buddha. If Buddha were here with you, how would he solve this problem? If we knew where to stand, we would question Buddha every morning and greet him every night. Look at the contradiction. We would question Buddha every morning and greet him every night. That is the quality of a real inquirer. He inquires with deep love, reverence. He does not inquire out of his knowledge. He inquires out of his living problems. The very crisis of life creates his inquiry. He is not bookish. He does not ask a question because he has read a book and the question has arisen. He asks because his life has created a problem. And when he asks, he has nothing inside him, any prejudice, any concept. He asks with the purity of the heart, like an innocent child. He does not ask to be convinced about something he is already convinced. He does not ask to argue, to debate, to discuss. He asks to know. He asks to understand. If we knew where to stand, then the whole point is, if you know where to stand, if you have come to an unwavering state of your mind, only then right questioning is possible. If you are trembling inside, if you are wavering inside, then you cannot ask the right question. The right question comes only to a mind who has come to a state of unwavering, a certain tranquility. Out of that silence, right questioning arises. I was reading one day about a man who went to his doctor. The doctor examined his hands. They were trembling. The doctor said, "My God, you are drinking too much. Your whole blood system has been poisoned. Almost alcohol is running in you instead of blood. You are drinking too much." The man said, "No, I hardly can drink because almost the whole thing is spilled. When I take hold of the glass, almost the whole thing is spilled. I hardly can drink." If you are wavering inside, the whole intelligence is spilled. Intelligence becomes a reservoir if you are unwavering. Always remember not to cooperate with the inner wavering. Not to help it, don't give it your energy. Remain indifferent to it, a little aloof, far away. And by and by you will see the wavering becomes less and less and less. And if you remain indifferent and don't get involved and identified with it, one day comes when suddenly you are in a moment of total stillness. Then you stand on the right ground. Then you stand in your being. Then for the first time you become capable of standing. If we know where to stand, we would question Buddha every morning and greet him every night. Morning and night are symbolic. Morning means the beginning of activity. When the mind will be active, we will ask Buddha every morning. And the night means inactivity, passivity, receptivity. And when the mind will be passive, non-active, we will greet Buddha. Active and passive. If your mind is active and you are standing, unwavering, you can ask a right question which can be helpful. And if your mind is unwavering, soon you will see the inactive face coming, where you will greet and praise Buddha, where you will bow down and respect the man who has helped you to come out of a crisis. I will let you, but as we don't know where to stint, I will let you into a secret. When I say this is so, perhaps it is not an e-say. When I say this is not so, perhaps it is not a nay-say. Remember, all e-sayings are not e-sayings. If your mind is negative, your e-saying will also be negative. And all nay-sayings are not negative. If your mind is positive, your nay-saying will also turn eventually to be positive. Jesus says one story. One father asked his elder son to go to the garden and to work there. He said, "Yes, father, I will go." But he never went. His yes saying was not exactly yes saying. He was cunning. He was false, unauthentic. He asked his younger son, he said, "No, I don't have any time and I will not go." But then he thought over it and went. His no saying was not a no saying. The real thing is what is inside you, not what you say. Buddha says there is no God. But you cannot find more divine a person anywhere else. H.G. Wells has written that Gautam Buddha is the most godless and the most godlike man of human history. He says there is no God. But don't think that this is a naysaying. Look at Buddha. He is so positively one with God that to say there is God will be wrong. That will create a division. He says there is no God. Don't be bothered by his words. Look at him. Watch him. And you will see God walking on earth. In your question whether there is God, you have already missed. You should have watched. God was before you. Buddha goes on saying there is no God, and he never means it. He simply shatters your mind, hammers your mind. He is simply saying no to your prejudice, not to God. One day it happened, a man came in the morning and Buddha said, "There is no God." And another man came in the afternoon and Buddha said, "Yes, there is." And then a third man came in the evening and Buddha kept silent and didn't answer this way or that. His disciple Anand became very much puzzled, because he was present the whole time. He said, "I will not be able to sleep tonight unless you explain it to me. What do you mean? One person you say no, another you say yes." They had asked the same question. And to the third, who has also asked the same question, you kept silent. You didn't answer at all. What do you mean? Buddha said, "The first man to whom I said no was an atheist. He has a concept of God, an ideology about it. I had to settle that ideology so that he can be freed from his bondage and can become available to truth. I had to say no. To help him to know God, I had to say no to his ideology that God exists. Otherwise, he will remain confined within words." To the man, I said, "Yes, there is God. He is an atheist. He has a belief that there is no God. I had to shatter him. Everybody has to be brought out of his belief system so that experience becomes possible. To the third person who is neither, who is a true seeker with no prejudice, I kept quiet. I told him, be silent. These questions are futile, meaningless. Just be silent and you will know. And he understood. And he bowed down and went away with deep understanding. So all e-sayings are not e-sayings. All naysayings are not naysayings. Let me tell you one anecdote. Over a glass of beer, Johnson said to Smith, my psychiatrist keeps talking about something he calls ambivalence, and I am darned if I understand it. No problem, said Smith. To be ambivalent is to feel contradictory emotions, to be both pleased and displeased with something, to both love and hate someone. That's what he says too, said Johnson. But I just don't see how you can experience two contradictory emotions simultaneously. Here is an example then. Suppose you had just bought a brand new Cadillac for $10,000, and suppose the very first day you owned it, its brakes failed and it went over a cliff a mile high. How would you feel? I would feel terrible. But suppose your mother-in-law was the only one in the car at the time, then? Your yes, your no does not mean much. They are ambivalent. Sometimes when you want to say no, you say yes just to hide the no. Sometimes when you wanted to say yes, you don't say yes, you say no, just to sow your ego, your strength, your power. No gives a certain power. Whenever you say no, you feel powerful. Whenever you say yes, you feel a little humiliated. Watch. Your yes may be hiding a no. Your no may be hiding a yes. When you cry and weep, it is not necessary that you are not smiling within. Because the reverse happens every day. You smile and you are simply hiding your tears. But if you watch people and don't get caught in their words, you will find immediately what is happening. The truth cannot be hidden. If somebody is smiling just to hide his tears, don't listen to his smile, just watch him. And immediately you will see behind the smile there are tears ready to come out. Whenever somebody says no, just watch the person. Watch the whole person. There must be indications which will show that deep down he is saying yes. And always listen to the depth. And don't be worried what people say. The world can become very, very beautiful and life can become really a celebration if you stop listening to people's words and you start listening to people's hearts. Then you will not be deceived. It happened, a woman had died and the funeral cottage was being set up for the wife of the dower, Cindy McTavish, who was dressed somberly in the appropriate black. The funeral director said to him, in a respectful whisper, and you will be sitting in the lead car with your mother-in-law. Cindy frowned, "With my mother-in-law?" "Yes, of course." "Is that necessary?" "It is essential." The bereaved husband and the bereaved mother, the two closest survivors together. Cindy turned to look at the large and sobbing figure of his mother-in-law and said, "Well, all right then, but I tell you right now that it is going to spoil the pleasure of the occasion." Dressed in somber black, appropriate for the occasion, but deep down, happy that the wife has died. Just watch people and you will be able to see that their yes does not mean yes and their no does not mean no. People are contradictory. The same happens to a Buddha also for different reasons. You are amphibious. That's why your statements does not mean what they tend to show. A Buddha is contradictory because he is trying to bring a truth into language which comprehends both the extremes in it. You are contradictory because your inner being is split. A Buddha is contradictory not because his inner being is split, his inner being has become one. But he is trying to bring a truth into language which is beyond duality. He has to contradict. In the Upanishads they say God is near, nearer than the nearest and farthest than the farthest. Because God is both the near and the far. He has to be both. Because he is all. God is both life and death. He has to be both. God is both devil and God. He has to be both. The English word devil is very beautiful. It comes from a root, Sanskrit root, deva. From the same root comes deva, divine. And from the same root comes devil. Devil and divine come from the same root, from the single word div. Devil is also divine. And the divine must have something of the devil in it. Christianity has cut the duality in two separate clear-cut parts. The devil is fighting God and God is fighting devil. But in the East, we have never split reality because reality cannot be split. Devil is God and God is devil. It is the same energy expressing through opposite polarities. When a Buddha talks, he has to use contradictions. When I say this is so, perhaps it is not a e-saying. When I say this is not so, perhaps it is not a nay-saying. Turn to the east and see the holy western land. Turn to the east and see the holy western land. Face south to see the northern star. Paradoxes. But truth can only be expressed through paradoxes. Your inner fullness can only be expressed by emptiness. And your real life is possible only through death. Resurrection happens only after crucifixion. If you really want to be alive, be as if you are dead. If you really want to be intelligent, live as if you are an idiot. Lao Tzu has said that the whole world is wise except me. I am an idiot. The word idiot is beautiful. It comes from the same root as the word idiom. Idiom is a personal style. Idiom means personal style. And an idiot means who lives his own way. An idiot means who is doing his own thing and is not worried about the world. One who is not an imitator is an idiot. It has nothing to do with stupidity. Saint Francis used to call himself an idiot. And Jesus was also known by his country as an idiot. Fyodor Dostoevsky has written a book, The Idiot. It is worth reading. The book is about a very simple man, very humble, unique. But because he is humble and unique and simple, the crowd thinks he is an idiot. If you try to live your life in your own way, you will look like an idiot. The crowd will not respect you. It respects only mass, false personalities, not authentic people. If you really want to be intelligent, be like an idiot. And if you want to be an idiot, collect knowledge. Be a pundit. And then you will be an idiot. Try to go deep into these paradoxes. The whole religion is expressed in the idiom of paradox. Turn to the east and see the holy western land. Because if you want to see the holy western land, ordinarily you will turn to the west. Why turn to the east? But this is how it happens in real life. Turn to the opposite polarity. Have you watched an old clock and the pendulum goes on moving from right to left, from left to right? When it is going to left, what is really happening inside the clock? When it is going to the left, it is gathering momentum to go to the right. When it is going to the right, it is already getting ready to go to the left. To go to the right, it goes to the left. To go to the left, it goes to the right. In the day you work hard, then in the night you have a deep sleep. Work hard if you want deep sleep. Contradictions. The ordinary logic will say, practice relaxation the whole day if you want a good sleep. Rehearsal it. Lie down on the bed. Remain on the bed the whole day. Because if you practice it the whole day, of course it is going to be better in the night. It is ordinary logic. That is what is happening in the Western countries. Insomnia has become common. And the reason? The reason has nothing to do with sleep. It has something to do with labor. If you don't work hard, you cannot move into sleep. If you don't sleep deep, next morning, you will not be able to work hard. Life exists in contradictions. If somebody comes to me and he says that I have trouble with sleep, I say, forget about sleep. Run 4 miles in the morning and 4 miles in the evening. Sleep is not the problem. You must be relaxing too much. Then sleep is not needed. Always remember, that deeper down all contradictions meet and are part of one whole. People come to me and they want to become silent. They want to move into a state of thoughtlessness. I tell them to do hard work, cathartic meditations, dynamic, kundalini, jump, move, shake. They say, but we want to be silent. Can't we just sit and be silent? Just like Buddha? You can sit, but you will not be silent. Inside, all turmoil will go fast. Rather do the opposite. Jump, jog, run, dance. Exert yourself, exhaust yourself. And after that, the pendulum starts moving to the opposite end. Silence is possible only when you are exhausted. Then sit silently. Then relaxation happens easily. Always remember this basic law. Otherwise, if you look and follow ordinary logic, Aristotelian logic, then you will miss life. Just move to the opposite. If you want to be really sane, be capable of being insane. Be capable of going into craziness. That's what I teach. Be crazy if you really want to be sane. If you try too much to be sane, you are going to be crazy. All too much sane people become crazy. They have to become crazy. They try hard to remain sane. That very effort helps the pendulum to move to the opposite side. Don't try to be sane, and you will be sane. Whenever there is an opportunity to be crazy, relax and go crazy. Don't miss any opportunity. If people are dancing, dance. Go crazy. Wherever you can find an opportunity to be crazy. And I can guarantee you will never become crazy. You will remain sane. You will have a sanity which cannot be disturbed by anybody, which cannot be disturbed by any circumstance. Yes, Fosso Hoyen is right. Turn to the east and see the holy western land. Face south to see the northern star. Enough for today.